Hi, and welcome to the Level 3 Anatomy and Physiology Revision Mastery Series by Parallel Coaching. And my name's Hayley Bergman, and I am really, really pleased to be sharing all of these seven modules with you. We're going to kick off and start with module one, and really, this is the key part that so many people get stuck on because we're talking about the heart and circulatory system. And a lot of people find that this is the crux to their understanding of anatomy and physiology because really it is the driving forces of our bodies. So, as soon as we understand how the heart and circulatory system works, it's the starting point of understanding how we get oxygen and nutrients around the body and how it links to our energy systems, how it links to our muscles, and how we move in general. So, it's really, really a key part of how we're going to move forward throughout all of these modules. Now, as this is the first one, make sure that you download the cheat sheet now so you have it alongside you, and you may want to follow along and fill in some sections as you go as well. So, alongside that, remember you can play, pause, and obviously rewind as many times as you need to go through and get the answers that you need, but also to make sure that you fully understand what it is that we're talking about here in the heart and circulatory system. So, in this video, we're going to be able to outline the main features of the heart, including the valves. We're going to look at describing the coronary and also the cardiopulmonary circulation. So we're going to look at how it circulates throughout the whole body, but also how the circulation of the heart itself. We're going to look at understanding the effect of lifestyle on circulatory health. So we're going to look at why it is that your body will react differently in circulatory health according to the types of activity and the lifestyle that you lead. Then that will relate to blood pressure and how that changes during exercise as well. And obviously, the final part of this module is to make sure that you download and complete your cheat sheet. And this will help you learn in a different kind of dimension, which will really add a little bit of extra clarity alongside what we're talking about here in the video. So, really, why? Why do we need to know about the circulatory system? And a lot of people say, oh, why do I need to know it in so much detail? Why do I need to know this part of the circulatory system? And why have they included it in the exams? And really, because it is such a fundamental part of our bodies, I mean, I'm sure you already know that actually, if our heart stops beating, we're dead. There is no further forward. So actually, it's a key part of the entire part of our anatomy and physiology. And it is essential to understand how the heart and the circulatory system changes with exercise, not only for yourself and making sure that your own workouts are fantastic, but also for when you're working with clients. So whether you're doing this from part of an exercise point of view for your anatomy and physiology, or maybe you're doing sports coaching or massage, it's still really important to understand actually how the body is moving and with that, what the relationship between the heart is when the body is moving. Because if we can understand the fundamentals of circulation, then we can understand what it is we're prescribing to people and how that relates to the exercise that we're doing. So, really, really important part. So, really, we're going to kickstart by actually having a look at the heart itself and having a look at how it circulates blood around the body so we can really dig in deep into understanding the heart and the circulatory system. So, I hope you're ready to move on. Let's go. Okay, let's looking at the features of the heart to start off with. And as you saw in the image before, it literally has four chambers. There's two upper atria, and then these are responsible for receiving the blood. So, regardless of the blood flow always is received into the heart by the atria. And that's really like a theatre atrium. If you think of an atrium in a theatre, it's the entrance hall, it's the place where things collect. So it's the same in the heart. You've got two upper atria, and these always collect blood. Then these move blood flow into the lower ventricles, and the ventricles are responsible for pumping blood. So they're much stronger, they've got much stronger and much more amount of muscle around them so that they can really pump blood around either the body or up to the lungs, depending on which side we're talking about. So now these atria and ventricles are also labeled according to being left and right hand sides. And that's so that obviously we can differentiate between the two, and also so that we can clearly see the blood flow through the heart itself. Now, alongside that, there are four valves. We're going to have a look at all four of those in this whole module so that you really understand what the purpose of those valves are. And also, another part of key feature of the heart is actually what it's made of. Because the heart itself is just one big cardiac muscle, one very big, very clever cardiac muscle, it's important to understand that as a muscle, it has its own properties, which really are unique. So cardiac muscle is very different to skeletal muscle. It is striated just like skeletal muscle, which means it can provide really enormous contractions and it allows for great force. However, it's involuntary, which is a relief because we need to make sure that we can have our heart pumping without us thinking about it. Now, the other name for our cardiac muscle is myocardium. And the name, the way to remember that is that myo always means muscle, and cardium obviously is very much like cardiac, that means heart. So myocardium means muscle of the heart or cardiac muscle. So then another feature is that we've got coronary arteries, and these feed into the actual heart muscle itself, and they deliver oxygen-rich nutrients to the muscle so it can contract. Now, this is very different to the circulation in the rest of the body, but it has exact same purpose in that all it needs to do is deliver that oxygen and those nutrients straight to the muscle so that it can contract and continue to contract. So then the other side is that it is a pump, and it, without our heart, we're not going to be able to maintain appropriate circulation in our bodies at all. So we need to make sure that the pump is always pumping, and that's why the heart is such a key part of understanding our anatomy and physiology. So let's take this one step further and really look at how the heart fuels our cardiopulmonary circulation. So in this nice simplified drawing that you see in front of you now, here you can see you've got the lungs at the very top of the screen, and you've got all cells of the body at the bottom of the screen. So that's not just the muscles, it's all of the cells that require blood flow to them. So then you've also then got in the middle my version of the heart. So it is a nice easy square. So in here you've got a nice simple square, and that square is basically going to be our drawing of the heart. And what I want to really highlight on here is that you can see we've got four chambers of the heart in this square. We've got the left atrium up here, the left ventricle down here, and then this one's going to be our right atrium and our right ventricle. So these are really key parts of understanding the heart. So once you understand those four chambers, we're able to move forwards. So make sure that you're happy with those four being the atria at the top, ventricle at the bottoms, and then they are divided into left and right. Now, it's not left and right how you look at it now. The red section is actually the left section, and that's because it's the left side of the heart for the person wearing it. So it's the person's heart it is. So if you see yourself as a heart surgeon right now, it's your patient's left and right rather than your left and right. So it's the left is the red as you see it here. Okay, to start following through this cardiopulmonary circulation, and really it's key that you remember this circulation. Quite often in exams, it's going to ask you, and it will probably, if it's multiple choice, will give you a series of order of all of these different processes, and really you've got to decipher which one is the correct route of the circulation. So here we'll start off. We're in the lungs. We're going to start off in the lungs, and this is where obviously all the oxygen is drawn in to the lungs themselves, and then they're held in the little alveoli, which are the little air sacs right at the very small part of the lungs. And those alveoli are surrounded in capillaries, and those capillaries are then able to push, able to accept the gaseous exchange through from the alveoli into the capillaries, and at that point the oxygen moves from our lungs into our bloodstream. So as soon as it hits the capillaries, it's then in our bloodstream. And then it's got to travel to the heart. So it goes from the lungs to the heart, which, as we know, isn't that far, but it's got to travel there. And it's traveling there via the pulmonary vein. Now, if you don't know already, veins always work into the heart. So they're always on their way into the heart. They're never on their way out. So that's a really nice way of remembering it, is that within the word vein, you can actually make the word in. So pulmonary vein is working its way from the lungs into the left atrium. So in this left pulmonary vein, another way of remembering that it's the pulmonary vein is that pulmonary means lungs. So it's moving from the lungs, and it's on its way in to the heart. So that's the pulmonary vein. Then from here, it slides down from the left atrium into the left ventricle. And here it's collecting, and then it's pumped with one massive contraction using the really strong walls of the left ventricle cardiac wall. So here, it's then pumped into this system, which is taking it off into the body. So this system at the top that we were just talking about is all about your pulmonary system. And now we're down here. As soon as it comes out from the aorta, it's all about the systemic system. And this is the body, how we feed the body with our now well nutrient and ready to be pumped blood that's nutrient-filled blood that we have in our body. So from here, we're going to literally go via the aorta first. So the aorta is the biggest artery in the body. It is the widest, and it can deal with the most amount of force, because the force coming out of this left ventricle is massive, because it's got to pump it around the entire body. So the aorta has got really thick walls which allow for this. So the aorta, a nice way of remembering that the aorta is coming away from the heart, is that aorta and arteries all start with an A, and they are being pushed away from the heart towards the rest of the body. So it starts off with the aorta, and that's like the tree trunk. They then break down into the arteries, which are kind of like the branches off of it. Then arterioles, which are the smaller branches. And then capillaries, which are the very tiny veins within every leaf, basically. So what you're looking at is a branching system that we have in our bodies, which allows the blood to go from a big pressurized area in the aorta right down to the tiny capillaries that we see just under the surface of the skin, or that are feeding every single cell in our body. Now, the beauty of this is that then the nutrients are drawn into the cell. The cell uses all those nutrients, which includes obviously the oxygen, and then it pushes out all of its waste products back over here. So then it's going to push out all of its waste products back into capillaries, because remember, these are the smallest versions possible. So it's pushing them back out into capillaries. And then these capillaries start to change into venules. And then they change into veins. So this is like a reverse of what we were just seeing with the arteries, but this time it's happening in veins, because they're on their way back to the heart. So they're on their way back in to the heart, which means that it is a vein, because it's on its way in to the heart. So we go from capillaries, which remember are like the small veins within a leaf. Then we go to venules, which is like the smallest branches. Then we go to veins, which remember is like the biggest branches. And then we go into the vena cava, which in this case is the big tree trunk. Now, this big tree trunk divides actually into two. You have one that is served from the upper part of the body and one that serves from the lower part of the body. So the superior vena cava is collecting all of the blood from the upper part of the body, which will include like the head and the arms and the chest and the upper back, whereas the inferior vena cava is taking it from all of your legs and your lower part of your torso and allowing it to come back into the heart. So this collection method basically allows it to be seamless and allows a lot less sort of interference as those capillaries and veins all join together. So you go through capillaries, venules, veins, and then into vena cava, where it gets to its thickest point. And that's coming up through the trachea, and then that goes into the right atrium. So really important that you see that this is coming into the right atrium. Remember, it can't go into a ventricle. It has to go into an atrium because that's the collecting chamber. That then falls down into the right ventricle. And then from the right ventricle, it's pumped out again and back up to what we call the pulmonary artery, so it can get back to the lungs. Because at this point, the blood is totally deoxygenated. There's no point it going back around the body. We need to get it back to the lungs as soon as possible so we can recharge it with oxygen and then start the process all over again. So from here, from the right ventricle, it is literally pushing through. And it's a nice strong contraction, and it pushes via the pulmonary artery right into the lungs. So remember, this is the pulmonary system. Arteries always go away from the heart, and it's moving towards the lungs, so it's pulmonary. And then it recharges and goes back round the entire system again. Now, this type of system really is simple, simple to understand. As soon as you understand the mechanics of why it needs to visit the lungs to get the oxygen, and why it needs to go to the heart to be pumped, and then why it needs to go to all of the cells, and that it actually needs oxygen before it goes to all the cells in the body, and then it needs to remove that and take it back to the lung, to the heart, and then back to the lungs. So as soon as you get to grips with this type of circulation, you're well on your way to understanding loads about the cardiopulmonary circulation system. So let's head on and really look at the heart in a lot more detail so we can really see the key features of the heart again in much more detail. So here's the heart. And it looks very different from the boxy image that I just showed you, so that the images of the four boxes. But really, it's the same. And on my drawings, which I'll take you back to now, let's go back across. You can see that actually I've drawn the arrow out the bottom of this box, but that is just for ease, for understanding. It actually, in the heart itself, is pumping it up so that it can be released back down. So you'll see it on the technical drawing as being pumped up first, so they always enter and exit from the top of the heart itself. So let's have a look at it here. And here you can see the same is happening. So let's go through that same system again. Remember, we receive the oxygenated blood from our pulmonary veins. So you can see these here, because we've got two lungs, it's coming from either side. That's fair enough. So they come in from either side, and then it collects here in the left atrium, drops down into the left ventricle. And remember, here's a really strong, forceful contraction before it goes out towards the rest of the body. Now, in this strong, forceful contraction just here, you can really see that the muscle here is massive to allow for that contraction. And then it's going via this little valve here, or very big valve, and right out into the aorta. And this is the aorta. This is the start of your systemic system, and this is going to allow that blood flow to go back all the way through and into the body. So it looks a bit different to the boxes, but all the same bits are there. And then once it's been down to the cells, it comes back, and this time it's deoxygenated. Remember, I said it comes from either an inferior vena cava or a superior vena cava. So they come in, but they both get to the right atrium. So we're at the right atrium now. Drops down into the right ventricle. Nice, big, powerful contraction. Not as powerful as the other one, though. Yeah? Then it goes up into the pulmonary valve here. And that pulmonary valve is then going to push it into the pulmonary arteries, which you can see where the blue arrows are coming back out of here. Now, that is then going off to the lungs to then complete the circuit all over again. Now, there are some key things that I want to point out, but first, before I even point them out, I want you to have a go at just filling in these boxes. So all I want you to do is just pause the video for just a second, and in that time, I just want you to write down and see if you can label A, B, C, and D using your the information we've already spoken about so far. So pause the video now and write down your answers to A, B, C, D, and E so that we can then go through those in just a second. So pause it now. Okay, so I hope that you paused your video and have done the little task. Basically, what we've got here is we've got A, B, C, and D, and you should, and E, and you should have completed all of those now. So let's go through them. A is your aorta, so that's the massive artery at the top of the heart, and that's being fed by the left ventricle. So then if we go down, the answer to B is the left atrium. So don't worry, if you've put right atrium, then remember it's not your right-hand side that you're looking at, it's the left-hand side of the heart, because you as the heart surgeon are operating on the patient. It's the left-hand side of the patient. Okay, and then C is going to be the left ventricle. So fantastic. I hope that you got that absolutely perfectly. And then into D, where we're going to look at the right ventricle. And then E is obviously the right atrium. So I hope you got 5 out of 5. If not, make sure you check those out even more so that you can understand the gaps that you have in your learning. So just rewind back to the previous part of this video and go through it again. Now, the other part that I really want to show you is that you can really see some valves in here. So it's a nice place to be able to really explore these. So I want to show you that here, you see these stringy type valves in here, and then there's some stringy type valves on this side. So these are your atrioventricular valves, and that's because they're between the atrium and the ventricles. So we class them as atrioventricular, and their job is to just stop the sort of impact, stop the blood from backflowing back into the atria. That's their job. They don't want the blood to flow back through to the atria. It's their job to keep it in here. Now notice there are only 2 on the left hand side, but there are 3 on the right hand side. So actually, as you're looking at these, your tricuspid is always on the right hand side of the heart. So you can remember this by the R meaning right hand side. So hopefully you'll be able to link the difference between tricuspid, it's got an R in it, and that means it's on the right hand side of the heart. So tricuspid is this side, there's 3 of them and they're on the right hand side of the heart. This side is the bicuspid and there's 2 little heart strings. Now we're going to look at the other valves in more detail in just a moment, but here you can see the pulmonary valve, where it really is exiting from your right ventricle right into your pulmonary arteries. And just in here you can see how that valve would look. And then you can also see your aortic valve, which is here, and that's just between your left ventricle and your aorta. So let's move on and look at these valves in a little bit more detail. Oh, your answers are just coming on screen now. Fantastic. And then head through. Okay, so let's look at heart valves. So looking at the heart valves themselves, don't worry about the drawing just at the bottom for a second. I will explain it in just a minute. The actual part at the top here is to really understand the difference between an atrioventricular. So remember that means atrium and ventricle valve, and then also a semilunar valve. They're quite different. So the atrioventricular prevents backflow of blood from the ventricles to the atria. And then, as I said a minute ago, you've got your bicuspid and your tricuspid. Tricuspids on the right-hand side of the heart, bicuspids on the left-hand side of the heart, but they are both atrioventricular valves. Then you've got the semilunar valves, and these are the ones that are going to prevent backflow from major arteries back into the ventricles. So these include the pulmonary valve and the aortic valve. And these are the ones that I showed you on the diagram as you see them going up into the aorta, for example. Now let's have a look at this diagram below. And just imagine this is actually your heart. So you're actually needing to be facing sort of upside down. So actually for this, you're going to be looking at the top of a heart. So look at the very, very top of this person's heart. And it's a sort of bird's eye view of the heart. Remember, all the valves come out through the top of the heart. So from here, it's actually facing back towards me. So actually, it's like you're laying on your stomach here and having a look at the heart. So the tricuspid valve, we know, is on the right-hand side of the heart, which, remember, as we look at it, is on the left-hand side. So it's on the tricuspid valve, and then the left-hand side of the heart is the bicuspid valve. And you can really see these in here. And they're actually deep inside the heart. But these two are the ones that stick out of the heart because they're going into the arteries themselves. So you've got your aortic valve in the middle, and then you've got your pulmonary valve, right, and that's sort of a little bit lower down. So when you're remembering these, it's often a very similar image if you have to label an image in any of your exams. So way I like to remember it is to give yourself a acronym to remember them in the right order. And really, you can look at it and say T, B, A, and P. So you might remember them as TBAP, for example. So really go away and see if you can create a little bit of an acronym that will help you remember the order of these valves if you had to label them. Now, you can really see the difference between the semilunar and the atrioventricular. So you know that these two are the same type and these two are the same type. These two are definitely semilunar. And then when you're dividing up, you know that the aorta is the thickest one. That's the massive artery in the body. So as you're working through them, you can actually apply a little bit of logic to these. So this heart diagram is really from a bird's eye point of view and just looking at the valves itself. So let's move on and look at the coronary circulation. So for some exams in particular, they will like you to understand the actual intricacies of how we get the blood flow right into the heart itself, into the myocardium itself, right into that muscle. And basically, where we have arteries all over our bodies, some of them branch off and serve just the heart muscle itself. Now, we just need to be able to label these. And actually, it's quite simple because we've been saying that the right-hand side of the heart, as we're looking at it now, is on our left. So you can see that here in the picture. So you've got the right-hand arteries on the right-hand side of the heart and the left-hand arteries on the left-hand side of the heart. So it makes things quite easy in terms of labelling. The only other difference is that you've got something called a circumflex artery, which actually goes all the way around. So it circumducts, it goes all the way around the entirety of the heart. So like the circumference of the heart. So that's a way of remembering that one. It's going around the circumference. And then you've got a left descending, so that suggests it's coming from the top and working its way down, it's descending artery, and then a right descending artery or a right coronary artery. So these three arteries are the main ones that you'd need to know about for your coronary circulation, and that really relates to understanding how that blood flow gets into the heart itself. Now, coronary circulation is really important because when we start talking about the impact of lifestyle on the heart itself, when people have something called a heart attack or a myocardial infarction, which is the bigger name for a heart attack, quite often it's happening from a plaque or a blockage happening in one of these arteries, which means that the blood flow doesn't get to that area anymore, and effectively that whole area dies, which will make the ability for it to contract massively impaired, and that will mean that oxygen nutrients don't get to the other cells in the body. So let's have a look at that in more detail and how that actually happens. So let's look first at atherosclerosis. So if you haven't come across atherosclerosis before, it is basically the buildup of plaques. And what I want to draw your attention to is down here. You can see, obviously, we've got our heart, and that's zoomed in on a normal artery. A normal artery is nice and clear. There's no plaques hanging around, or very few. And it's certainly a clear runway for all of your blood to flow through without any obstacles to worry about. Now, The beauty of this is that it's like having a three-lane motorway that is open all the time, even in peak traffic. And obviously the peak traffic from this metaphor for exercising is when you're exercising the hardest, when the demand is greatest. And that's like peak time in the traffic on your motorway. So you've got your motorway, three lanes of traffic all going through. It can deal with it at peak times as well. But if we've now got obstacles in the way, which in this case are a buildup of plaque. Now, the other name for plaque is atheroma. So that's where atherosclerosis as a word comes from. Plaque is called atheroma. Now these atheroma build up in the arteries, and as the plaques build up, the arteries become more and more blocked, and it essentially becomes like someone has closed one of the lanes in the motorway that we were talking about. So with one of the lanes closed, it can deal with it when we're sitting down and when we're relaxed and when the demand isn't too great on the body. But as soon as the body needs more oxygen to come through and the heart rate starts to increase and we have a greater demand for the blood flow, then the blood starts to block up, starts to sort of backtrack, and you start to get pains whereby the heart isn't getting the oxygen that it deserves, that it needs. And if you've ever sat on your leg for too long, when you've been sat on the floor or you've been sat on a plane journey and you get a bit of a dead leg, that's basically when you're not getting any blood flow to that area. And it's the same feeling which causes this cramping feeling around the heart, whereby the heart is complaining that it's not got enough oxygen and blood going to it. So it's that same feeling. And really what's happening here is that the plaques themselves are blocking the way, which means the buildup of blood behind it. And that's like a tailback on the M25 because you're down to one or two lanes. Now, some people have something called angina. And angina is a condition. And this condition is basically whereby they've got these plaques already here, but as a result, they're always working off one or two lanes on their motorway. So that means that as soon as the exercise intensity gets too much or the demand on their heart gets too much, even down to being surprised, and the heart starts beating faster and faster and faster, can't keep up with the demand, and they get this searing pain in their chest, like this guy on this image here. So he gets this massive pain in the chest. But as soon as they stop exercising, they start to feel better. So angina is a condition. However, a heart attack is a complete blockage. So instead of there still being one lane open, the whole motorway is closed. So this bit is totally and utterly blocked. So as this blocks, no oxygen can get through, which means that no oxygen is getting to the rest of this heart. And basically the heart starts to die because it's not getting the oxygen and nutrients it needs. So a heart attack is an event and angina is a condition. Now these together are both caused by atherosclerosis, and atherosclerosis is just the buildup of atheroma around the arteries itself, which causes a blocked artery effect. Okay, so we've now explored atherosclerosis in great detail, so you'll have a great understanding of plaques and how these affect and can cause heart attacks and also angina as well. And obviously alongside that, that's coronary heart disease as soon as this atherosclerosis is building up. So let's have a look at what these risk factors for atherosclerosis actually are. You've basically got two different types of risk factors. You've got modifiable risk factors, which are things that you have control over. And also you've got non-modifiable risk factors, which are the ones that you don't have control over that have been and gone, or that you can't actually change in your life. Now, if you're looking at these with your clients, then really you can start going through and finding out whether your clients are actually at risk of having circulatory disease or coronary heart disease, because this is going to mean that you're able to offer them advice on the things that are modifiable in their life, which will then allow them to change those and reduce the effects of their lifestyle, effects of their life on their heart health. So family history is definitely non-modifiable, and that's something that's happened in the past. but some whose family have had history of coronary heart disease are more likely to have problems with their heart later on. Now, lifestyle, smoking and environment are all modifiable. So if your client has got a poor lifestyle or a very sedentary lifestyle, then they're going to be more likely to have heart problems. Alongside that, smoking has a very well-researched link to heart problems. And that's because of the buildup of plaques and cholesterol in the body. And that changes the blood lipid profile, which means that you end up with more of those plaques, more of those lane blockages in your arteries, which basically is going to open its way up to coronary heart disease. Alongside that is environment, and that's to do with the people that you're around and the places that you're living, and that is a modifiable change. Then you've got age. So age, unfortunately, is non-modifiable. We can't change it, but it's a risk factor nonetheless. Those that are older are much more likely to have coronary heart disease than those that are younger. Physical inactivity is a massive one, and this is why we stick with those ACSM guidelines to really make sure our clients are reaching their minimum amounts of exercise in a generic week, which obviously is 150 minutes of regular intensity exercise, because as soon as they hit that moderate level of the recommendations, then they're much lower risk of getting circulatory and coronary heart disease. Then you've got issues of particular conditions that will lend themselves to coronary heart disease, which is if people have high levels of saturated fat and cholesterol in their actual diet, that can be a big considerating factor because it builds up the plaques bit by bit in those arteries. Then you've got hypertension. So if they've got high blood pressure, then it could be either a result of coronary heart disease or it could lead to. Then you've got type 2 diabetes comes into that, obesity, high blood cholesterol, blood lipid profile ratios, stress, and obviously if they're on hormone replacement therapy as well, that can lead to coronary heart disease. So these risk factors together, the more of these risk factors that one of your clients has, then the more likely it is that they're going to get coronary heart disease or a circulatory problem of some sort. So it's nice to be aware of the risk factors and how they exist. Now, when we're talking about cholesterol, it's important to sort of understand the difference between fats that enter the body and how they're maneuvered around the body, how they're transported around the body, and how that relates to the plaque buildup. So essentially, our body creates both HDL and LDL cholesterols in our body. So they're building up all the time. We create those. Now, high-density lipoproteins are, in inverted commas, the good ones, and low-density lipoproteins are, inverted commas, the bad ones. And there is variations between those, but really, you're looking for a good ratio between your blood lipid profile, which is HDLs versus LDLs. Now, when we exercise, we encourage more of the good ones, and when we eat things like saturated fats, especially stuff from meats, then we produce more LDLs, and that means that the LDLs are literally just the fat. These cholesterols are basically moving around in our blood the whole time. Now, the benefit for these, the reason why they're good or bad in inverted commas, is really like street cleaners, and this will take me to explain. So imagine that you are wanting to transport fat around your body, and we need to transport fat around our body. Fat needs to go into the bloodstream, but it needs a little piggybacking, basically. So it piggybacks on the back of cholesterol around all of our blood flow. Now, HDL's job is to help remove plaques. So it's really good at picking up fats and getting rid of them in the body. And it's kind of working like a street cleaner all the time. Whereas low density lipoproteins like to make lots of mess. They like to take the fats and deposit them in the arteries. So if your ratio isn't right between these HDLs and LDLs, then that can lead to the big buildup of plaque that we were talking about in atherosclerosis. So it's really important to understand the difference between HDLs and LDLs and how these really relate to keeping a balance in the body. So we're looking for a decent blood lipid profile. And as soon as those LDLs start creeping up, then the HDLs just can't deal with it anymore. And it's like at the end of a festival when there's tons of rubbish, and all it takes a lot more street cleaners to go in there and clear it out. And that's basically how it works in the body in a nutshell. So now you have a little bit of an understanding about what builds up to this circulatory disease and how that looks in the body with your atherosclerosis and the impact of that for heart attacks and angina, etc. Let's look at the effect of this on blood pressure as well. So, looking at blood pressure classifications, there are obviously, if you have high blood pressure, we also name blood pressure that's high as hypertension. So if you see hypertension, it basically means raised blood pressure. And it means hyper, meaning more than, and then obviously the tension side. So hyper means high blood pressure. Now that includes cardiovascular disease, heart attack, stroke, and kidney dysfunction are all the four main areas that are going to increase your chances of having high blood pressure. But also, these are caused by having high blood pressure. So by having high blood pressure, you are much more likely to have a stroke, a heart attack, kidney dysfunction, and cardiovascular disease. So it's really essential that we manage people's hypertension and blood pressure back down to a normal level. So what is normal? Now, I'm sure you've taken blood pressure before, and if you haven't, then definitely go and get it done. You can get it done at your GP, for example, but literally the cuff goes on the arm and it is measuring two different measurements. It's measuring your systolic blood pressure versus your diastolic blood pressure. Now, systolic blood pressure is the pressure in the arteries when your heart is contracting maximally. Diastolic is when your heart is totally relaxed. So you can see that the numbers on the diastolic side of this grid are much lower than those in the systolic. And really, that's a reflection of the fact that the heart is totally relaxed. But both are are equally important when understanding the health of the heart and the pressure that's going on in the arteries. A high blood pressure could obviously be caused by so many different things. It could be by salt, it could be lack of movement, lack of activity, increase of cholesterol, it could be their stress. So it's really important that we learn to manage those and bring it down. So let's look at the normal to start off with, and this normal classification of blood pressure is 120 over 80. So here we're looking at this sort of clear gap between 120 on systolic, between 80 on diastolic. And that's an optimal place where we ideally want our clients to be. They can obviously be lower than that, but if it drops below 90 for systolic and below 60 for diastolic, then at that point we class it as low blood pressure, which is hypotension. And you can see that here on the top of the table. So really we're looking to start between to have an optimal blood pressure of about 120 over 80. Now, as it creeps up slightly, pre-hypertension is still absolutely fine and they're okay to exercise. They're still classed as healthy. They don't actually have hypertension. It's basically just increasing gradually. Now, this is 120 to 140 or 139 over 80 to 89. So in this bit, it's creeped up a little bit, but it's not as put to the point that we class it as being hypertensive, which is either stage 1 or stage 2 that you see below here. So here you've got 140 to 159, and then obviously you've got over 160 to be stage 2, and then in diastolic is 90 to 99 or over 100. Now it's really key to understand these different brackets because you need to know what they mean when you're testing your clients, for example. You need to know what's classed as high blood pressure or what's classed as particular stages of blood pressure as well. Now, when you're working through this, if you have a client whose blood pressure comes in at 145 over 85, just look at this table now and tell me which bracket you believe they would be in. So stage 1 hypertension, pre-hypertension, normal hypertension, or obviously stage 2 hypertension, where do you think they are? And they would have been 145 over 85. So take a minute to think about where you think they are and what type of classification you would give their blood pressure. So I hope you've had a little think, and basically this equals out at stage one hypertension. Now the reason for this is that 145 is down here in stage one, and then 85 is here in pre-hypertension. Now that means that we've got two different readings on two different lines, and although it would be nice if every client we ever see fits within a particular bracket, they don't always, which means that you've got to go for the highest one. So always go for the highest one, and in this case that client would be stage one hypertensive. What if your client had a blood pressure of 162/105? Yeah, so that one's stage two hypertension, and here is quite obvious because it literally says more than 160 or more than 100. So really you can use this graph and this table to really understand what the different blood pressure classifications are. Now I really recommend that you go through and remember the difference between stage one and stage two hypertensions, as well as the difference for normal hypertension too. Okay. So let's have a look at the cardiovascular benefits and also the risks of endurance and aerobic training. So aerobic training we're going to define as the type of training whereby you're using your heart and lungs, and the primary fuel source is in your aerobic zone. So let's look at the health benefits of this type of cardiovascular training. And here we're going to see that people are going to improve their actual ability to do everyday functions, which involve the aerobic zone. So we're looking at walking, going up the stairs, maybe lifting and moving things, because they're going to feel fitter in themselves. Now they'll also have an increase in bone density as well, because it will be weight bearing activities, and this might include an aerobics class, it might include walking or running, and this just means they're building up the bone density and what their bones can actually withstand. And that's great for someone if they're getting older, especially women that are post-menopause or those that have been previously diagnosed with something called osteoporosis, which means that they've got very low bone density. Now also it's going to reduce the risk of coronary heart disease, partly because of the circulation is actually being used maximally, it's being used continuously, but also because of what we were saying about HDLs and LDLs, we're actually getting more street cleaners in our blood. We're getting more of those HDLs moving around, which basically allows us to start clearing out those plaques and starting to make way for the blood to come through easily with a lower risk of heart attacks and strokes, which is awesome. It's going to reduce our blood pressure for the same reason. We've not got any plaques hanging around. And also it's going to improve our blood cholesterol profile, just like we were just talking about. Now it can also reduce and maintain body fat percentage because the fuel source that's being used. So we talk about fuel sources massively in the final module where we talk about energy systems, but here you're looking at fat being burnt in aerobic zones. So really body fat percentage can be managed and potentially reduced by using cardiovascular training. Now there are some health risks with cardiovascular training that we also need to think about, and some of these aren't you might weigh up and say, well okay, they're acceptable risks, but for some people they are too much. So really we're looking at, there is an increased risk of injury for muscle strains, joints, connective tissue and muscular imbalance, but really that relates to the type of technique that that person has during the cardiovascular training. So we can manage that risk massively, and it also relates to the type of intensity that they're doing based on their beginner status compared to say an advanced status. So it's about appropriate programming for the right time for the right client. Now also it increases the workload on the heart, so it's really important that when you start out with cardiovascular training that beginners start at a beginner level so that their heart can gradually progress, because a huge impact of workload on a poorly heart, one that's affected by risk factors that we were talking about earlier, may not end in a very nice way. So it may be more likely for things like heart attacks because of the sudden increase in workload. Now, there's also an increase in carbon dioxide production, which most people can deal with very effectively, and they just remove through the circulatory system that we were looking at a moment ago. However, some people find this quite exhausting as it builds up in the body if they don't have the ability to remove it easily from the body. Also, there's an increase in lactic acid production because of the other energy systems that start using the body. And some people find that quite overwhelming on their muscles. So it's about gradual introductions to all of cardiovascular. Now, it can reduce body fat percentage through cardiovascular, but it takes a lot of doing, and it also is all about nutrition. However, it is advised that people consider where they are in their body fat percentage between healthy ranges and obese levels or underweight levels, so that we actually understand whether it's an important strategy for someone to be using if they're already underweight. So you need to be considering the risk factors for particular clients when doing particular exercises. So from here, from cardiovascular benefits, we have literally explored everything about cardiovascular training. And the next step for you is to download the cheat sheet. So for this bit, just download the cheat sheet that goes alongside this video and then fill this in. And it is as simple as that. We've got loads of questions in there that you can complete, which will test your knowledge on what we just spoke about. And you'll be able to go back through and play this video at any point that suits you. But the other side of that is there's a few other interactive tasks on there that will allow you to relate and just complete that learning that little bit more. But a massive well done for all of your concentration as we've gone through. So here we've outline the main features of the heart, including all of the valves. We spoke about the four chambers. We spoke about how there's four valves. We've got our atrioventricular valves. We've got semilunar valves, and how these action, what their purpose is in the heart for preventing backflow of blood. Then we looked at coronary circulation, which was of the heart itself, and we were talking about the different arteries that are within the coronary circulation. And we also spoke about the cardiopulmonary circulation, whereby it went from the heart and the lungs all the way around the body and went back in. So you really need to get to grips with those circulations so you can really understand where they are in the body. And then you've also got to understand the effect of lifestyle on the circulatory health. We're speaking about coronary heart disease in some good detail, so you can really see how those plaques build up to form something called atherosclerosis, which really is going to be a big health indicator for leading into strokes and heart attacks. And we related this into blood pressure and relating it to exercise as well. Now, all that's left for you to do is to complete that cheat sheet that was on the previous slide and download that one. So, very well done for all of your concentration throughout the heart and circulatory system module. It's been a pleasure to go through it with you. If you have any questions at all, then please do email us at info@parallel-coaching.com, and I'll be more than happy to take any questions that you have. However, do make sure that you check out the cheat sheet, because there are more questions to really help your understanding in there. And I look forward to seeing you in the next module. Until then, take care.